Okay, morning, everyone. Today's daf in Pesachim is daf Ayin Hey. Okay, we have the privilege, the pleasure of starting the seventh parak of Pesachim today, which is Zayin Dalet. So that, of course, means that we're behind, and I really would like to be up to speed, especially as we get to Rosh Hashanah. Tomorrow morning, we're going to meet regular time. I just discussed it with Phil. We're going to meet regular time tomorrow morning at 7. The Mishnah starts off as follows. Now, just to get a good overview of what we've been discussing now, so 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th parakim of Pesachim deal with Karban Pesach. Okay, 9th parak is really going to talk about Pesach Sheni, but parakim 5 through 8 really deal with the Karban Pesach itself. So really, we've answered one question. In other words, if I could really just distill and limit the category, the discussion that we've had up until now, when we talked in the 5th and 6th parak, we really addressed one question, and that is when. When do I shech the Karban Pesach? So the 5th parak discussed when specifically in terms of hours, meaning we talked about it has to be on the 14th day of Nisan, it has to be in the afternoon, and then we pinpointed exactly when in the afternoon I'm going to shech the Karban Pesach. So the 5th parak really addressed the question of when I have to shech the Karban Pesach. The 6th parak we talked about when I have to shech the Karban Pesach when the 14th falls out on Shabbos. So in other words, it's more to the question of when, and that is specific to when the 14th day falls out on Shabbos, and we spoke about what aspects of the Karban Pesach can I do and what can I not do when the 14th falls out on Shabbos. So that was the 5th parak, that was the 6th parak. And now we get to the 7th parak of Pesachim. We're literally now in the heart of the whole topic of Karban Pesach, and now we're going to address a very simple question, and that is how. How do I roast the Karban Pesach? Okay, so that will be our topic of discussion over the course of this parak. We begin the discussion, but before we begin the Gemara, the Mishnah and the Gemara inside, so let's address a really simple, straightforward question, meaning, as you know, the Torah says that it has to be tliyesh, it has to be roasted over a fire. So basically, we're creating a huge barbecue. And as we also know, there's an issur in the Torah of etzem losish berubo, that you're not allowed to break the bones of the Karban Pesach, so the bones have to be intact. But more than that, as we're going to see over the course of today's daf, and hopefully we'll cut into what should be today's daf, which is daf ein hay, more than that, it has to be roasted whole. Meaning it's basically going to be a whole lamb or a whole sheep that's roasted over a fire. Okay. Now, we know, and again, before we start with the Mishnah, we know that when it comes to eating meat, or eating an animal, I should say, parts of the animal are permitted and parts of the animal are not forbidden, are not permitted. So for a simple example, chalev. Chalev are the forbidden fats in an animal, meaning that riding alongside organs, particular organs of the animal, so there are the hard fats, which is called chalev, which we're not allowed to eat. In fact, the eating of chalev is a more serious prohibition than eating non-kosher meat. Meaning eating non-kosher meat, that's a lav. That's a negative prohibition in the Torah. Eating chalev, that's an issur kares. But that's fine, though, because as we know, we already discussed this before, the chalev we take out of the animal and we put it on top of the mizbeach, meaning this is a carbon. So we're not gonna have any problems with chalev. Chalev is fine. What are some of the other problems that exist inside of an animal? So dam, the blood of an animal. That's going to be a major topic in today's daf. In other words, we're going to be talking about the extraction of the blood so that we can eat the animal. Okay, we'll cover that as well. What else inside of an animal is problematic? Not problematic, but prohibited. What can't you eat inside of an animal? So the the amorim we're going to put on the mizbeach, right? So that's correct. And the blood, we're going to talk about how we're going to extract the blood. And so what's left to discuss in terms of inside? What's inside the animal that I cannot eat? So the gedanasha. Right, inside every animal and inside every human being is you have the sciatic nerve. Sciatic nerve that runs down the spinal cord and runs over the hip of the animal. So the gedanasha is prohibited in the Torah. It's a law in the Torah. So the gedanasha. So interestingly enough, there will be no discussion about the gedanasha. It's one of those things which, if you think about it, you realize, hey, that's an issue. And then we're going to go through the Mishnah, we're going to go through the Gemara together, and there is no discussion about the gedanasha. Now, obviously, it's still right. Let's take it for granted that there's no way that the Torah permits us to eat the gedanasha, even if it's a Karban Pesach. Meaning, the gedanasha is objectively aser. The Torah says it's aser. So one has to only consider the possibility that we're not going to eat the gedanasha. The question that one can ask is, am I going to roast the animal with the gedanasha? Now, the answer seems to be obviously yes, because the Torah is makpid that I have to roast the animal whole. But then that's strange then, because basically what I'm doing is I'm basically roasting an animal with something that's forbidden inside the animal. and then you get onto an issue and a discussion of the taste of the Gidanasha is going to now be sent, it's going to transfer over to the rest of the animal. So there is that discussion, which I'm just pointing out. It's interesting. It's not in the Gemara.
Maybe roasting destroys
the. So the Rambam, you got to see it inside. It's not for now. But the Rambam and the Ravid have a disagreement in terms of what exactly we're going to do with the Gidanasha, whether we're going to have to try to extract it before we roast it or after we roast it. So it's a major debate between the Rambam and the Ravid. It's just interesting how it didn't make it into the Gemara. Okay, but fine. So again, chaylev, there's really not much to talk about because we're going to shech the animal, we're removing the chaylev right away. In other words, remember that's what we discussed earlier, we were flaying the animal so that we can get the imurim, the insides of the animal, we're going to put it up onto the mizbeach, good. So the chaylev is nothing to talk about. Our discussion is primarily going to revolve around blood. Blood will be today's daf, and then, with the real daf today, Ayin Hay, we're going to talk about Sli'esh. We're going to be talking about roasting it over an open fire, and we're going to give parameters in terms of what exactly that means when the Torah wants us to roast it over an open fire. We start with the Mishnah on Ayin Dalet Amud Aleph, 7th parak. Ketzad Solanas HaPesach, how do I roast a Karban Pesach? Mevi'in Shpush Shel Rimon. So we take a spit, a skewer, but make sure it's made up of Rimon. That doesn't mean actual pomegranate. I know Rosh Hashanah is coming, that's all we can think about. But it actually means the wood from a pomegranate tree. In other words, take the wood from a pomegranate tree, and now what you're going to do is we're going to skewer the animal. So we're going to take this stick, and thin side is going to go through the mouth of the animal. It's going to go all the way to the other end of the animal, and I mean that here literally. It goes to the other end of the animal. And so now basically what you're going to do is, I know in our minds, usually when you think of an animal roasted over, you think horizontally. From the picture that I'm going to try to paint is that it's not a horizontal roast, but it's rather going to be vertical, where the mouth is going to be facing down and the rear is going to be facing up. So, right, it's going to look a little more like a shawarma. So the ad base nukavasov, and no stain is curious. Oh, it's fine. V'tochpiv ad base nukavasov. Good. So that's the general picture we're going to draw. V'no stain is karav is b'nei ma'avlatocho divrei Rabbi Yossi Haglili. Rabbi Yossi Haglili says, now what am I going to do with the intestines? Now the intestines, by the way, are fine. Meaning it's not imurim. The intestines are not imurim. We're going to end up eating the intestines. Where do I put it during the roasting? So remember, now I shechted the animal. I basically opened up the cavity of the animal. I removed the imurim, the fats of the animal, the kidneys of the animal, which we discussed goes up onto the mizbeach. So I removed the imurim, but now I got all this wonderful intestines that we're going to want to eat. So where are they placed during the roasting? So Rabbi Yossi Haglili says, just put them back in the animal. Right? Stuff them back into the animal. Basically, it's, you know, stuff lamb. Stuff with what? With intestines. So that's the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Haglili. Rabbi Kiva Omer came in.
What happened to the leg? Why are they cut off?
So the legs.
Yeah, they were cut off?
No. It just. It's interesting. It's interesting. Right. I don't know why. I mean, the pasuk says. I mean, I understand that Rashi quotes the pasuk, right? Rosho al kir av al kir bo. So, yeah, but right. Karav over here. I don't think it means the legs. All right. Anyway, so the Divrei Rabbi Yossi Haglili, Rabbi Kiva Omer Kim Bishul Zeh. So Rabbi Kiva comes back at Rabbi Yossi Haglili and says, I really disagree. Meaning, because what's going to happen? You're going to take the intestines, you're going to put them back into the animal, and now you're going to roast the animal. So granted that the external parts of the animal, the muscles of the animal, so they're going to be roasted. But the intestines, they're not going to be roasted, they're going to be cooked. In other words, they're going to be sitting inside the animal, sitting in the liquid and the juices of the animal, and that's not roasting, that's cooking. And we know, the rule number one when it comes to Karban Pesach has to be roasted. So over here, if I take the intestines and I put them back inside, that's not roasting the intestines, that's cooking the intestines. Rabbi Kiva says, no, that's not what you do. So what do you do? Elatol and chutzalo. So what you do is you take the intestines, you roll them up, and you basically stick them to the outside of the Karban Pesach. So they themselves go right over the open fire, and then they themselves are going to be roasted. Okay. Ein stolnas haPesach lo laShpur velo laSkala. You cannot roast it over a spit or over a grill. I'm Rabbi Tzadok Meister Rabbi Gamliel Sharm LeTevi Avdut Say Vitzlan Lanas haPesach al haSkala. And then Rabbi Gamliel says to his attendant Tevi, right? He gets a lot of play in the Mishnayos. So he says, look, I want you to roast the Karm Pesach for me over a metal grill. Which the Gemara later on will know that that's difficult to understand because the Mishnah just got done saying you're not allowed to do that. And then the Mishnah brings a story in where he did it. Exactly what we said we're not allowed to do. This is what's called Maisa Listor. It's a story that contradicts the Mishnah. It happens, and the Gemara is going to obviously address that issue. We will come back to that point later on. Okay, some very basic issues, which I didn't really explain in the Mishnah, because the Gemara is really going to tackle all these very basic issues. Number one, the Gemara starts off, V'nesi shama teches. What's wrong with the metal spit? In other words, the Mishnah is set on this idea that we have to use a wood spit, and actually very specific, we point to the wood of a pomegranate tree. We have to use a wood spit, and first and foremost, simple question. Usually when you roast something, you're putting meat on a spit to roast it, so usually it's on a metal spit. What's wrong with metal? So the Gemara's explanation, I did the problem is very simple. Metal is an excellent conductor. So you put the metal over the fire, the metal's going to get red hot. And now what's going to happen is that yes, you'll be cooking the Karm Pesach, but how is it going to be cooked? It'll be cooked from the metal spit. And that's not what you want. You want Sli Eish. You want the actual fire roasting the Karm Pesach, and not the metal, the hot metal, to be roasting the Karm Pesach. V'rechman Amar, Tzli Eish V'lo Tzli Machmas Davar Achim. It has to be, the cooking has to come as a result of the fire, not of anything else. V'nesi Shel Deko, the Gemara says, okay, good. So now I know why we don't want metal. Metal's an excellent conductor, and I don't want that. I want the fire. But why pomegranate wood? What's so special about that? Why not any other wood? So the Gemara's explanation, I did Islay Shivei Mapik Maya, Vahavikim Avushal, because when it comes to other woods, so they're not as smooth. There's a lot of grooves in other woods, and it allows for water to come out of the wood. And basically now what's going to end up happening is because of all that moisture that's coming out of the wood, so essentially now the Karm Pesach is going to be cooked in a liquid, and again we want strictly fire. No liquid. Menesi shel te'eni. So the Gemara shel te'ena. The Gemara says, okay, but what about the wood of a fig tree? So I did the mechalchal mapik maya v'havelei kimevushal. So again, it's not a good wood for our purposes. It's hollow, says the Gemara, which means that there's a lot of water and sap inside of this wood. And again, what's going to happen is if I'm sticking it through the animal, as I'm roasting it, the water is going to be coming out of the wood and going into the Karm Pesach. And again, that's too much bishul action. We want only tzli, we want only roasting. So the Gemara says, what's wrong with wood of a boxer tree, wood of a sycamore tree? So I did the isbe kitrei mapik maya. So the Gemara says, that's also not going to be good because they have a lot of knots. In other words, it's not a smooth piece of wood. It's wood with a lot of knots in it. And those knots are saturated with liquid. And again, same problem. Liquid is going to be coming from the spit into the Karm Pesach. And that's bishul. That's too much bishul. Shel rimo nami yisbe kitrei. So the Gemara says, pomegranate tree, it's not a perfectly smooth branch. It's also going to have knots, so shia kitrei. So the Gemara says, what we could do is we could smooth out those knots. Or I should say rather, the knots themselves are smooth knots. They don't need to be rubbed out. Or the Gemara suggests an alternative answer. It's a very young pomegranate tree. It doesn't have any knots yet. It's a sapling. So the sticks that come off the saplings are very smooth. Okay, good. So far, so good. Now, basically, we have now provide an explanation of our Mishnah, why specifically the wood of a pomegranate tree. Again, it's the thing that conducts the heat the least, so therefore the wood itself is not cooking the animal, and also it has the least amount of water content, so therefore there's no liquid coming out, and cooking the animal as well. So the Gemara says, okay, but in other words, we had to have cut the wood somewhere. Wherever we're cutting the wood, there's going to be liquid content in the wood. Has to be. So what's going to end up happening is that there's going to be a drip coming out of the wood. So the Gemara says, "Damapik lebe paskai labar." So in other words, good. So wherever we cut the wood, that's going to be sticking out from the animal. And basically, yes, there's going to be a small drip coming out of the wood, but that drip is going to go right down into the fire and not into the animal. So good. Adkan, that just explained the very first point of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, "Shpud shel rimon, spit of a pomegranate tree." Why? Answer, to put it simply, it does not conduct heat, so it itself will not be cooking the animal, and also least amount of liquid content, so we won't have that water, which we don't want in this scenario, because the Torah says, Sli Eish. Point number one. Masisim Dloka Rabbi Yehuda, Detani Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Kishem Sheshbut Shal Eitzen Nisrach, Nisraf Kach Shbut Shal Matechas Eino Martiach. So our Mishnah is not going like Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda says metal will be fine. Amru lo, they say to Rabbi Yehuda, Zecham Miksaso Cham Kulo, Vezecham Miksaso Eino Cham Kulo. And they just simply reject Rabbi Yehuda. Look, metal conducts. So when one part of the metal gets hot, all the metal gets hot. Wood does not conduct. So in other words, I can have one piece of the wood getting hot, but that doesn't mean the rest of the wood's going to get hot. Wood's the best thing to roast the Karm Pesach with. V'nosein es kirav. And then what we do is that after we shech the Karm Pesach, before we put on the spit, what do we do with the intestines? So there were two opinions in our Mishnah. Rav Yosef Aglili, put them back inside. Rabbi Kiva says, don't you dare, because that's cooking. Take them out, roll them up, and stick it to the outside of the animal. Tanya Rabbi Shmuel, Kareya Toch Toch. So we learned in the Brisa, Rabbi Shmuel would call Toch Toch. Toch Toch, you're going to see this a couple times throughout the Gemara. That's a word which actually is the production of a sound. Meaning, everyone here knows this, except for me. I'm an, or whatever. Okay. Okay, we all understand, right? Certain words are used where the sound the cow makes, moo. Okay, so in other words, it's not a word; it's just the sound it produces. So toch toch. So this is not a word, but rather it's the sound that it produces. It's like the bubbling of water. Rashi explains, Rabbi Shmuel Karei toch toch. The nosel asochus firle ukishem artichen umisbashem besochen nishma kol resichasan. When it's inside and cooking inside, you can actually hear the bubbling inside. Toch toch kol asir, just like you're listening to a pot. That's how Rashi explains the words toch toch. Rashi does give another explanation. In other words, Rabbi Shmuel says, no good, meaning you're cooking. It's cooking inside, and it sounds like from this brisa that Rabbi Shmuel is not praising this, but saying, like Rabbi Akiva, this is a form of cooking. Rabbi Tarfon Kareo Gedimakulas. Rabbi Tarfon refers to it as Gedimakulas. That's a term that we saw earlier in the Masechta. Gedimakulas, Rashi explains over here, as he did earlier, that it is a right. It's a roasted animal. And where's the Rashi? Here we go. Makulas. Lashon Kova Nechoshes. A copper helmet. Right, the Metargamina Kulsa Denachsha. Now, there's a subtle difference between Rashi over here versus Rashi earlier in the Masechta. Rashi described it as being stuck to the side. Over here, Rashi says you put it on the head of the animal. Either way, the point being is that I roll up the intestines and I stick it to the outside of the animal. Over here, Rashi describes to the head of the animal so that it's roasted. The word makulas actually means a helmet, says Rashi. So it kind of looks like, I mean, you really have to be a little bit creative in your imagery, but it kind of looks like now after you roll up the intestines and put it on the head of the animal, it almost looks like a helmet on the animal. Nowadays, we're not allowed to do it. When I roast it all together, nechlech mimenu aver. If I cut off a limb, nishlach mimenu aver. If I cook a limb, means a gedimakulas. So that's not considered gedimakulas. It's clear from our Gemara over here, by the way, that you're not cutting off a limb. I mean, right? It's just okay, fine. Hashi yishlam nechlech mimenu aver dafa gav dekam matvilei bade amar lo. The Gemara now just says a simple question. Look, you said that I'm not allowed to cut off a limb. Even if I plan on roasting everything, meaning I'm going to roast the body of the animal and the limb that I just cut off. That's no good. Meaning the carbon Pesach has to be roasted whole. So nishlach mibayi. So if I cook a lamb, so you think that's going to be okay? I mean, in other words, it's such an obvious point. I'm Rav Sheshet Shishaka b'mechubar. So Rav Sheshet says, I cooked it b'mechubar, meaning while it was still attached to the animal. Meaning I essentially roasted most of the animal, but one of the limbs I had sitting in a pot. I might have thought that that's okay. I don't know why that would be a fear. Havamina, but I might have thought that that's okay. The Brisa says, no, that's not okay. In other words, the entire animal has to be roasted from end to end. Okay, good. Adkan. All right. So now, two basic issues have been we've dealt with over the course of this morning. Number one, the spit. The spit has to be made out of wood, pomegranate wood. We explain why. Two, what do I do with the intestines? So Rabbi Akiva says, and that's the opinion which is accepted, Rabbi Akiva says that I take the intestines, I wrap it up, and I stick it to the outside of the animal so the intestines get roasted as well. Okay, and now from this point going forward, so now what we're going to basically be dealing with is the issue of blood. Okay, let's just talk outside the Gemara for just a moment, and then we'll go back to the Gemara inside in just a second. Torah tells us not to eat blood. Blood, like chaylev, is an issur karis, meaning that if one eats blood of an animal, so that is a very serious violation. Again, I'll also make the same point I made earlier today. It's more serious than eating non-kosher meat. Eating non-kosher meat is a law. It's a negative prohibition. Eating chaylev, eating dam, that's an issur karis. So we're not allowed to eat blood. So that's, you know, that's going to be tricky. In other words, even before we start with our Gemara, just ask very simply. Every animal has blood. So in other words, what do we do when we eat animal? In other words, when we eat the meat of the animal. So there's blood inside, and every piece of meat has blood inside. And just, you know, when you roast meat, you'll see all that red juice coming out of the meat. And that obviously has trace blood in it. So in other words, how do we get rid of the blood? Okay? So basically, before we answer that question, let's just take the blood of an animal and... I kind of mean this literally, but dissect the blood into its into different categories. Number one, there's dam hanefesh. Dam hanefesh means that the blood that comes out while the animal is losing its life, meaning while the animal is going from a live animal to a dead animal, so it's losing blood, right? You shecht it, you sliced open the neck, so now you have a whole gush of blood coming out of the animal, so that's dam hanefesh, that's an issur karis, meaning that's bona fide dam, that's the absolute blood, and if it were a carbon, that would be the blood that we're going to use for zrikas adam, so that's dam hanefesh, so that is prohibited, fine. So, but that's obviously coming out of the animal. Then there's what's called dam tamtzis. Dam tamtzis means that even after the first gush of blood that comes out, but then there's obviously still going to be more blood dripping out of the animal, so that's what's called dam tamtzis. Debate amongst the Tanaim, if I remember correctly, whether that's an issur karis or it's just a lav, but either way, it's prohibited. That meat is prohibited. Okay. So in other words, when you shecht an animal, so the dam nefesh is coming out, the dam tamtzis, you let it drip out, and now what is left inside, so this is what's called dam evarim, the blood of the limbs. Meaning, obviously, in every organ, in every muscle, there's still going to be trace amounts of blood. This is what's called dam evarim. Now, generally speaking, the way it works is like this. If dam evarim is inside the avertz, if it's inside the limb, that's mutter. Meaning, not even asur midrabbanan. Right, Tosis over here points to another Gemara in Chulin that describes, Gemara in Shabbos, that describes that, let's say so you're going to eat a raw piece of meat. Now, not recommended, but in other words, right, in some fancy restaurants they do that, right, they cut the meat real thin. Carpaccio?
I think that in Israel, 2 weeks ago.
So they slice it really thin, and okay, so in other words, you eat raw meat. Are you allowed to do that? Gemara says, yeah, you're allowed to do that. Obvious question, what about the blood? Dam evarim. Okay, so that's fine. Now, here's where it gets a little bit tricky. So in other words, dam hanefesh, no good. Dam tamtzis, no good. Dam evarim, as long as it's inside, that's fine. Once it's poresh, once that blood leaves the aver, and so it's now separated from the aver, that blood becomes prohibited. Now, on a daraisa level, on a derabanan level, I'm not sure. I'm unclear about that. I need better clarification on that issue. But once dam ha'ever is porish, once it separates, so now it's going to be prohibited. So Every time I cook, in other words, so let's start simple. I cook a piece of meat. I'm going to be separating blood. Blood is going to come out. In other words, through the heat process, blood is going to come out. So obviously, if I'm cooking meat in a pot, that's going to present a very simple problem. Here's a piece of meat. I cook in the pot. The blood is going to come out through the cooking. And then what's going to happen? And then it's going to go back in. And so now I've created a problem where I was pourish the dam, and then the dam went back into the meat. So that presents a problem. So what do we do? I mean, this part we all know. What we do is we try to remove the blood prior to cooking. So there are two basic means, maybe I could even say three, but there are two basic means of extracting the blood. Number one is salting the meat. Right? Go back a generation, although now I have to say two generations ago. Right? From my end, I realize I'm getting older now. But right, correct. In other words, my mother salted the meat in Buenos Aires. But in other words, you go back a generation, two generations ago, and any time before that, meaning for most of our Jewish history, we salted the meats in the privacy of our own homes. We got the meat from the butcher, and then we went home and we salted the meat. And now, what does salting do? So salt causes a exothermic reaction. It actually is going to be extracting the blood. So so one way of extracting the blood is through salt. Another way of extracting the blood is going to be through fire. By roasting, basically, that heat is going to draw it out. Now, fire in this regard is better than cooking. Why? Because in cooking, the blood comes out, but then it turns around and goes right back into the meat. That's a problem. By roasting, it's fine. Because what's going to end up happening is that the blood's going to just drip down into the fire, but it's not going to go back into the meat. So when you roast the meat, so that's another way of extracting the blood, and it's great. We'll be discussing a little bit later on, in just a couple of minutes, what if I put the meat directly on the coals? So here, right, you understand the question, meaning in a pot of boiling water, so the blood comes out and then comes right back in again. If it's over the fire, the blood drips down, and obviously it doesn't come back up. But if I'm putting it directly on the coals, right? You hear that? That's going to be a good question. The Gemara is going to discuss that in just a moment. Okay.
When you roast the whole animal, the blood that's inside, where does it go?
Right.
It goes inside.
So stay tuned. The Gemara is going to ask you a very question. Okay. So Haimul Yasa Sharya. So the Gemara starts off, not in the place that we would, you know, in other words, it's not the most basic question to ask right now, but in other words, we're basically going to be asking various different questions regarding the blood content in the animal. Mulyos, if you take a look at Rashi, Phil, you want to help me with the French word over here? It's like five lines from the bottom. In Paldora, right, sometimes Rashi says empanada. Now, I happen to know what that is, but it's not what he's saying over here. Anyway, Rashi says, okay, basically stuffing meat inside. Okay, so in other words, I have an animal, there's a cavity of the animal, and what do? I stuff meat inside of the cavity of the animal. So, haimul yasa sharya. So, it's mutter. That's how we start off the discussion. So, amalei abaye v'hakabala dama. So, abaye says, can't be mutter. Right, Phil raised this point just a moment ago. In other words, what's going to end up happening is that it's bolei adam. It's going to be absorbing blood. Amalo kabola kach polto. So the Gemara's response is yes, yes, and yes. Yes, it's going to be absorbing blood, but also it's going to be spitting out blood. Meaning, what's going to happen as you're heating it over the fire is that the blood is going to basically be coming out. So because the blood is coming out, and again, it drains, it drips out. We'll talk in just a moment a little more about the actual draining. But it drips and drains out, so therefore it's fine, says the Gemara.
What does they have to say they have to put meat inside? When just the whole animal, what does it need? It still has blood inside.
First of all,
where does that blood go?
I understand that, but in other words, the Mishnah was describing the intestines going inside. So it's kind of like a takeoff from the Mishnah.
Right, but you're, okay. Same question.
Wait a second. We're going to kind of get to that point. I'm like Kabbalah Kachpolta. Name him Misayelei Nos in his Kervas Benema Avlatocho. So the Gemara says, good, our Mishnah seems to be making the same exact point, where you take the intestines and you put them inside. So my time, Alam Mishum Darmin Kabbalah Kachpolta. So the Gemara says, Okay, and for the reason we just explained, so the Gemara says no, because remember how I described the way it's set up, like shawarma. Basically, it is not horizontal, but rather it's vertical. And as I described back in the Mishnah, head down. So now, in other words, when we say head down, remember the base hashchita, the place where you cut on the neck, is going to now be facing down. So you now have gravity helping you. It's a powerful force. So all that blood now is running down. So because of that, one can argue, made of diving, now we have a drain. We've created a natural drainage of the blood. So in our Mishnah, we want to argue that you're going to take the intestines and put it back inside the animal. Fine, I can understand that. Because all the blood is going to drain down, and I've created a natural opening for all that blood to flow down. But if we're just talking about a regular stuffed animal, where I'm not creating a natural draining area, so that's going to be a problem. Name him Sayele Halev Karo Matias Damo, Lo Karo Karol Acha Bishulom Karol Acha Bishulom Mutter. So the Gemara says, what about the heart? Now, the eating of the heart in America, we don't eat that part of the animal. We don't eat that organ. But you go to other countries. In Israel, it's popular, right? So you sit down, you can eat. Chicken heart they serve? Goose heart? Whatever. So how do I extract the blood of a heart? Now, the heart is a cardiac muscle where there was blood inside, obviously blood outside as well. So what do? So I tear it open and I extract the blood. But lo koro, koro la acha bishulo u mutter. So, but the Mishnah says, but if I roast it, now I know the Gemara says the word bishul, but if you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi says we're not talking about bishul. Because remember what I said just a couple of minutes ago. In the bishul world, what's going to happen is the blood's going to come out and the blood's going to go right back in again. Bishul in this context means flea. So if I roast it, so the Mishnah says it's fine. My time, Allah Mishnah Dominica, Bolakach Polto. So the Gemara says, why? Because when I'm roasting it, all the blood's coming out through the act of roasting it. So the Gemara says, Shani Lev Deshia. So the Gemara says, yeah, but the cardiac muscle is very smooth. So the Gemara says, all the blood's going to drain right out of that cardiac muscle as I'm roasting it, and it's not going to get absorbed back in. But if it's not a smooth muscle, if it's a more porous muscle, like muscle, like what we would call regular muscle, like skeletal muscle, so that, the Gemara says, that may present a problem. V'ha rabin saba tafle ayi bar guzla l'rav. So the Gemara says, okay, but we have a scenario where Ravin stuffed a bird with basically bread, right, stuffing, if you will. The amar le imale tafle havli ve'echol. So the Gemara says, if it's a good stuffing, so I'll eat it. So in other words, again, the issue should be that the blood is coming from the animal and going into the stuffing, into that flour that I placed inside of the bird, and shouldn't that present a problem? So the Gemara's answer is Hayi Bismida. Now these Gemara's coming up over here are going to be very difficult because we're going to basically differentiate between different types of flours. In other words, some flours are absorbent and absorb blood fantastic, which is a problem, and some flours are really not absorbent. And therefore, the blood's just going to basically run off the flowers. Now, I don't really know, to be honest with you, I don't really know the differences between some of these flowers. So I'll just read the Gemara, I'll go through it. I'll give some sort of pretense, like I understand what's going on over here. But I don't know the differences between these types of flowers. So, Ahib Smita, the Gemara says, it's talking about Smita. Smita is really fine flour. Right? So therefore, the blood doesn't stick to it. So therefore, as you're roasting it, the blood just basically runs right out of the animal. So the Gemara tells us another story, where Rava went to the house of the Reish Galusa, v'tafle bar Ivza, and once again, it was a stuffed goose, stuffed with flour. So, Amar ilo dechazisa dezik kezuza, chivre lo achle menei. Now he said, look, I'm going to eat it, and I'm going to eat the stuffing inside as well, but only because I inspected it and I saw that there's no trace blood in the flour, meaning to the eye, it is red free. There's no tinge of red in the flour. But If there was any tinge of red, I wouldn't have eaten it. The Gemara says, but if we're assuming that roasting extracts the blood, so what difference does it make what color it is? Meaning, look, meat is also red. But we assume that when I roast it, all the blood gets drawn out. So here too, even if the flour were a little bit red, so what? I assume that the blood gets drawn out. So the Gemara says, Hasam bechavarta disharir. So the Gemara says, yeah, there, we're talking about chavarta. Rashi explains that it is flour, kemach nikia, but it's not fine flour. And so therefore, because it's not a fine flour, so it is more absorbent. And if there were tinges of red, so it would be basically picking up some of the blood of the bird. Ve'ilchasa, and the Gemara now gives us a conclusion on all this. If it's fine flour, so then even if it's red, it's okay, because we're going to assume that the actual blood content runs out of the animal. Now, if it's chivarta, if it's flour but not fine flour, but if it's flour, so then you have to inspect it and see if it's red or if it's not red. If it's red, it presents a problem. We assume that is trace amounts of blood, and therefore you're not allowed to eat it. If it's clear, it's okay. And when it comes to other flours, meaning anything outside of the fine flour that we described, or the chivarta, or the regular processed flour, if it's any other flour, so if it's red, it's usur, and if it's not red, it's mutter. Okay, again, I don't understand really the differences between these different types of flours. Some are absorbent, some are not absorbent. Fine. Hai mulyasa manda asra afilapuma latachas. Now, when it comes to mulyasa, so again, we're talking about now the stuffed goose. So, even if the one who says it's prohibited, remember, and on the previous Amud, the bottom of the previous Amud, debated between the Amoraim, the Amori that says it's Asri says even if the mouth is below, meaning even if there's a draining of the blood, it's still going to be Asr. And the one who says it's Mutter, he's going to say it's Mutter even if the mouth is facing up, meaning even if I don't have a natural draining of the blood, I still assume the blood's going to seep out. And like we said earlier, it's going to evaporate. And by the way, the Gemara says on this machlokas that we saw earlier, so when you're roasting, even if I'm putting meat inside of it, so we say it's mutter. Okay. Umsa bei umizrike pligi baravachav ravina. So when it comes to now these different types, parts of the animal, umsa, just regular meat of the animal, right? Muscular meat of the animal. Bei, so that's the batesim of the animal. And mizrike, that is, sounds like the carotid arteries, meaning Rashi describes it as basically your big arteries that run through the neck. So I assume it's carotid arteries. Feel free to disagree with me. This is not my specialty. But anyway, so basically, what are these three? Two of them are organs, and the first thing is a muscle. So what do they have in common? So they have an excessive amount of blood pooled inside of them. Now, it happens to be yesterday I researched a little bit regarding the Beitzim, where, first of all, again, outside of America, they're eaten, right? Hard to imagine. It's not something I'd really be ordering at a restaurant, but okay. In other words, it's not our culture. But it's popular in other areas, in other countries. Good. What I was curious to know is there an excessive vascular activity in the Beitzim? So I have a number of doctors here in this room, but basically, I didn't get a positive reaction, right? Right, much like right now, right? Same. I don't know why. Maybe something else about its anatomy. I'm not really sure, but anyway, good. So these three items. So how do I extract the blood from these three items? So pligi bar ravachav ravina. So we're going to have a debate amongst the Amoraim. So b'chol ator kula ravacha, and then the Gemara makes just a simple parenthetical note. You know, normally ravacha luchum ravina lekula, meaning you can almost count on it. Ravacha is going to be machmir, and ravina is going to be mekel. Okay, that's usually their party lines. Ve'ilchazak ravina, and by the way, the halach is going to be like ravina. On any debate that they have, we're going to go on the lenient position of ravina. Lakula. Labar mehanitlas. However, there are three areas where there's gonna they actually switch positions. The Ravacha, Lakula, Ravina, Lachumra. where Rav Acha comes out to be a Mekel and Ravina comes out to be a Machmir. Ve'yuchazik Rav Acha l'kula. And oh, by the way, on these three issues where they switch party lines, we, lahalacha, are going to follow like the Mekel position. Otherwise stated, we're always going to be Mekel whenever there's a Mechlokis between Ravina and Rav Acha, wherever they may lie on the position, we're going to be Mekel. Okay. Hayomsa de Asmik, if I have umtsa, if I have meat, that's very red. So chatcheum achei afilu kedei rashari. And what do I do is I salt it, and salting extracts the blood. Good. So, good. We have a Gemara over here that describes the salting method. So it so extracts the blood, I can even cook it. Right? You understand? That means then that there's simply no blood content left inside the animal. Because what happens is that the salt takes out all the blood. Whatever's left inside is simply juice. Right, the juice of the animal, it doesn't legally categorize as blood, and therefore that would be mutter. I can even cook it. Shafte bishpuda share meidav dayev. If I put on a spit and I roast it, that's also fine, because the roasting also extracts the blood. Achte agumre. Here we go. I foreshadowed the question earlier this morning. What if I put it directly on coals itself? So, this is the debate. The one who says it's prohibited, why? Because basically what's happening is that you're searing the blood into the meat. That's no good. And the one who says it's mutter, when you put on coals, he argues that it doesn't sear it into the meat, but it actually draws the blood out, and the blood gets lost in the coals. Okay, so it seems to be that we're having a debate in Metzius and what actually happens when I put it on top of coals. Hard to imagine. Generally speaking, my training and learning is that we try not to set up a debate as a reality debate, but it's rather a halachic debate. Okay, anyway. V'hilchasa meshav sha'iv. So the Gemara says the conclusion is the coals draw out the blood. So in other words, fine. So you could put the meat directly on the coals and the blood is going to be sunk, it's going to sink into the coals and evaporate into the coals, get burnt out by the coals. Okay, next. V'chein bei. Same thing when it comes to the beitzim of an animal. So, chatchino machino afilu kedera ashayin. So, it's going to be the same discussion. Cutting it and salting it, great. And you're allowed to even cook it after you salt it. Talina b'shpura sharia made of daiv. If I put it on a spit and roast it over an open fire, also great. The blood just simply goes into the fire. Achtino gurme, what if I put it directly on coals? Again. And again, same debate. Do the coals sear it? Do the coals just collect the blood? V'chein mizrake. Now, it's funny, I don't know why the Gemara is doing this right now. In other words, just going through the same debate for each one of them. Just simply say, it's the same for all three. Same thing for the carotid arteries. If I roast it over in a fire, as long as the opening is down, so that the blood is able to drain out of the carotid artery, that would be fine. Made of dive, achte agumre. What if I put it on the coals? Again, same debate, whether the coals sear the blood into the carotid artery or whether it draws it out. And again, the conclusion is the same. You're allowed to put it directly over the coals. Hi, umsa di ismik chaya aser, lo ismik chaya shari. Okay, now I mentioned that there's a number of ways to extract blood from meat. We went over two so far this morning. Number one, we talked about roasting over an open fire. You could put even under that roasting on top of coals, which we've now concluded is fine. We talked about salting as a way of extracting blood. Now we're going to be talking about using vinegar. Okay, vinegar also has, right, you just smell vinegar and you can just smell the potency of the vinegar. So if I soak meat in vinegar, that's also going to be a means of extracting the blood. But the Gemara over here is going to have an interesting discussion. Good. I've removed the blood from the animal. What about the actual vinegar itself? Well, you can only imagine that's going to be an issue because the blood went somewhere. Blood's now sitting in the vinegar. Hayumsa de ismek chalye aser. So the vinegar is going to be prohibited. Lo ismek chayashari. Now, if the vinegar is not red, it's going to be mutter. Ravina amar afilo ismek nami chayashar. Now, Ravina says, no, I don't care if it's red or if it's not red. If you're soaking the meat in vinegar, the blood has to be there. You may not see it, but it's got to be there. So, yesh delais be shir yuke dame. There's got to be trace amount of blood in the vinegar. Amle mar bar me mal ravashi aba megama legamue. So he says, you know what my father used to do? He used to drink that vinegar up. Okay, I know it doesn't, to me, unappealing. I'm probably going to get consensus on this issue, but that's what he did. Egidam Ravashi Gufi Megamale Gamue, Ravashi himself drank it. Amale Marbar Memala Ravashi, Abba Haichala de Chalid Bey Chadizimna, Sulo Tani Chalid Bey. Now, if I use vinegar one time to extract blood, that's it. Meaning it only gets one time usage. Vinegar's potency to extract blood from the meat can only be done once. I can't reuse vinegar. So, Maishna Mechala Matma'a Dechaltinan Bey. The Gemara says, well, how is it different then? In other words, basically the Gemara is asking, why not? Why can't I reuse it? But the Gemara gives a very straightforward answer. Hasam Ise Likiyue de Pere Be'ene. Hachalese Likiyue de Pere Be'ene. Answers the Gemara very simply because, well, the original usage of the vinegar for its first time, it had its potency, it had its sharpness, therefore it extracts blood. After that first time usage of the vinegar, it has now lost its potency and lost its ability to extract the blood. Okay, yes.
Didn't we learn earlier that vinegar is like
fish? Meaning, in this regard, it's strong enough. Vinegar is like the perfect middle. In other words, it's strong enough where it's going to extract the blood, but not strong enough where it's going to take the blood and put it back in again. Bishul is going to do both. Bishul will extract the blood, but at the same time, it's also going to send it back in again. So Bishul becomes the problem. This salting and pickling in vinegar will extract the blood. But it is interesting, though. For some reason, it doesn't send it back in again. All right? Look, all this, we're just touching all these issues. We're not getting a lot of depth on these issues. Okay, so all this needs further discussion. Ein Solnes HaPesach. Okay, let's continue our 9 Hamad Aleph. Okay, we got cut into today's daf. Maisa Lister, the obvious question. You go back to the Mishnah. The Mishnah does not read well, because the Mishnah says you can't use a metal spit. And then Rami Gamliel says to Tevi, his servant, you know what? Use a metal spit. Okay. By the way, you want a great discussion which the Gemara is not going to have. Rabbi Gamliel lived when? Historically. After the Beis HaMikdash. Hey, what's he doing talking about a Karban Pesach? And roasting of the Karban Pesach? Okay. I'll address that question another day. It's a great discussion. But that needs some sort of explanation. Maisa Listor. So the Gemara says, the story contradicts, the Mishnah contradicts itself. Chesur Mechzor Achi Ketani. So the Gemara says, here's how we're going to do it. Im Ha'askala Minukeves Mutter. If it is a spit that has holes in it, kind of like, it's kind of hard to describe, I don't have a picture in the Mishnah, and so I'm just going on my own imagery, but kind of like our grates. Meaning, you know, in other words, what's the story with our grates? It's not a solid piece of metal. It's not a pan that I'm putting it on. In other words, it's basically holding the Karban Pesach in place, but there are a lot of gaping holes there so that the fire goes through the gaping holes. Now, again, I know you could argue, you could say, yeah, but anywhere where the Karban Pesach makes contact with the grates, it's going to cook in that area. I realize that's an issue, but basically, that's how we're going to explain it. Meaning, basically, grates. Grates are fine. If you will, grates are great. The Amr of Yisrael Meister Ben Gamliel Shamal Tevi Avdot Seyot Slalano was a Pesach Al Askalam Anu Kevis, and that's what Rabbi Gamliel was instructing Tevi to use the grates. By Minei Rav Chinah Bar Idi Minei Rav Ada Bar Ava Tonu Sheisiku Bekliber Arlev Garfa VaAfa Bosapas LeDivrei HaOser Mahu. The Gemara now is going to turn its whole discussion to the following. The Torah says that when I roast a Karban Pesach, it has to be Tzli Eish. With a very clear definition. I got to roast it over fire. Meaning, heat is not enough. It has to be, there has to actually be a fire. Now, you remember we had a discussion earlier in the Masechta, the Gemara here goes over it, if I remember correctly, second parak of Pesachim, where we talked about I roasted an oven, I heated up an oven using klipe arla, the shells of arla, which they themselves are prohibited. And what we then discussed is, I heat up the oven, so now the oven is saturated with the heat of the klipe arla, and I swept out the klipe arla, so all that's left now is just the derivative heat from the klipe arla. Now, one opinion we saw earlier was, well, that's a problem, because I'm not allowed to benefit from arla, and so therefore that's a problem. So I'm wondering now, what do you see from that? You see from that that derivative heat is still considered heat, meaning I still trace it back to its source. So I'm wondering, what does that basically say to you? That the definition of fire doesn't seem to be that you need an actual fire, even if I have residual heat, that's enough. So would it be okay then, according to that opinion, if I roast a carbon Pesach, not directly over a fire, but over an area which was heated up, the fire is no longer there, but I still have the residual heat. Is that okay? So he says, well, if all I have is just heat and I don't have the original klipe arla, the bread is mutter. The Gemara says, okay, but let's go to the Carbon Pesach. Carbon Pesach has to be over an open fire. And there has to be the actual fire there. Meaning, together with the source of the fire. Meaning, the actual flames themselves. Why? Because the Torah says Sliyesh twice. It's clear that because the Torah says it two times, so that's why I need the original source fire there. It sounds like through the rest of Halacha, I don't need the original source fire there. So time to Galar Rechman and Sliyesh, Sliyesh Tei Pa'amim. Halo Galar Rechman, Ahav, I mean it's Sliyesh Hu. So then I would have thought that that's considered Sliyesh. And essentially now, going back to the case of Klipe Arla, the argument we want to make is that even if I don't have the original Arla over there, but as long as the heat is derived from the Arla, that heat is still going to be prohibited. That's still going to be called roasting over Klipe Arla. The Gemara's answer, simple. Where do we learn all these halachas of fires and its derivatives? We learn it from Carbon Pesach. And essentially, in the world of Carbon Pesach, when the Torah demands that I roast it over an open fire, it has to be that the source of the fire needs to be there. Meaning the water or whatever I'm using to make the fire, it needs to be there. Once it's gone, so then the heat derivative is no longer considered Sliyesh. Same thing with Klipe Arla. When the Klipe Arla are there, so that the fire that's coming out from there is prohibited. Once I remove the Klipe Arla, the derivative heat is no longer considered heat of Arla. Good. That's answer number one. Or the Gemara says you could say it like this, and you can make the distinction this way. When it comes to roasting your Karm Pesach, the Torah wants fire, meaning heat is not enough. The Torah's Hakpada is on fire. So therefore, it's not enough just simply to have the heat derivative. I need the actual fire as well. When it comes to Klipe Arla, what does the Torah care about? I'm not allowed to benefit from the actual Arla itself. So when the Arla is there, it presents a problem. When the Arla is removed, it no longer is a problem. Let's do a little bit more for today. I'm excited. We're almost, we're not caught up, but we're catching up. Tanu Rabbanan. Chad chavanasno agabe chalem. What if I cut the Carbon Pesach and I put it on top of coals? Now, cut over here, not cut into pieces, because we already learned on the first part of today's daf. You're not allowed to cut into pieces. Mm-hmm. Cutting over here, you know how when you roast, when you're grilling outside, you know how you used to make incisions in the animal so that the heat goes through the incisions? That's what we're talking about now. So now Rabbi says, coals equal fire. And really, really, for the rest of the daf today, we're going to be discussing this aspect of coals equaling fire. Meaning, the question is really simple. The Torah said Sli Eish. Now, Eish is fire. What we're going to try, I know I said it's simple, but basically, we're going to try to define fire. What is fire? When the Torah is instructive and the Torah demands that the Karban Pesach has to be roasting over fire. So anyone, this summer, right, I had the good fortune of spending some time up in the mountains in Georgia. So we made a fire almost every night outside in the fire pit. So in other words, you understand that fire doesn't necessarily mean to actually see the flame. Meaning if I have burning hot coals, that's fire. Right? You touch it, you're going to get burnt. You put anything on it, it's just going to ignite. So in other words, we're really looking to find what's the definition of fire. Rebbe says that if I have hot coals and I put the Karban Pesach over hot coals, that's liesh. You're good. Good. And what we're going to be doing over the rest of today, we're not going to go through it right now, we don't have time, but what we'll be doing for the rest of the daf today is trying to come to some sort of definition of what is fire. So let's do just a little bit more for today and then we'll finish up the rest tomorrow. Ramile Rav Achtaboya Bar Amile Rav Chista Miyama Rebbe Gachalim Eish Nenu. Is that true? Rebbe really says that coals equals fire. V'remenu, the Gemara says, Mechvas Eish. We know that one of the tzaras afflictions is to be burnt, and after being burnt, you see a white spot where you were burnt. That's tzaras. One of the formations of tzaras. The variations of tzaras. The Torah describes it as michvas ish. You got burnt in a fire. Ein li elosh nechva beish nechva begachelas beremitz besid rosach begaf sis rosach v'chol davar habam in or leisuye chamea or minayin. What about getting burnt with anything else? I mean, anything else that was heated. Meaning even water. So how do I know that that's also included? Tamal amar michva michva riba. Because the Torah repeats the word michva, which is inclusionary. So in other words, what do you see over here? There's fire, and then there's something heated by fire, which is not fire. So it sounds like Rebbe is incorrect. It sounds that way. It sounds like only the flame itself is fire, but something which is heated is not fire. So time de Rabbi Rachman mechva mechva halo Rabbi Rachman mechva mechva gachalim lav eish nenu. It sounds like coals does not equal fire. Amar le gachal shel eitz lo itzdurach kral rebuy kitzdurach kral gachal shel mateches. So the Gemara makes the following distinction: coals of wood, coals of metal. Coals of metal, that's not fire. Coals of metal is metal heated by fire. So in the world of roasting Karban Pesach, that's no good. In the world of getting burnt for tzaras, yes. But not because it's fire, but simply because it's heated by fire. Coals of wood, that's fire. The Gemara says, V'kachel shamantech alav eishu v'ha gabi bas koin dechsiv by ish tisarev. The Gemara says that we burn a bas koin. Right? A bas koin shezinsa. Right? She committed adultery. So under certain circumstances, instead of receiving the regular punishment of an adulteress, which is skilas refa hereg chenek, right? It's a capital crime, but she's put to death through chenek. But a bas kohen, she gets a upgrade is not the right word, but in other words, she gets a right. It's a more serious offense because she's a bas kohen, and therefore she gets srefa. The amar rav masna psilas shel eva yosin la. And we know what you do is you with the Gemara Sanhedrin, 6th Perek, you take hot lead, you pour the burning hot lead, the boiling hot lead down her throat. So in other words, what do you see? Lead is obviously a metal. I boil it, and that's considered srefa. That's considered burning. So the Gemara says, Shani Hasan Damakra Be'esh Tisaref. Tisaref l'arabos kol srefos habos min'esh. The Gemara says, look, you got to read the pasuk very carefully. It first says ba'esh, and then it says tisaref, which means that you don't burn her with fire, but basically anything heated in a fire is what you burn her with. So if the Gemara says vinakile chavile zmuros vinikle, so the Gemara says, okay, but if that's true, so why not do the following? Why not burn her in a fire? Now, I know this sounds unbelievably crass, but basically, what the Gemara is going to spell it out. In other words, Let's do it the most painless way possible. So just burn her in a fire. So Asher Sreifa Sreifa Mimnei Aram Alahalan Sreifas Nishma VeGuf Kayam Avkan Sreifa Nishmas VeGuf Kayam. So the Gemara says no, because we do have a Sreifa in the Torah. Bnei Aram were burnt on a fire. They were burnt internally. So therefore, the Sreifa capital punishment has to be an internal burning. Venavile Chamei Aor. So the Gemara says. Okay, so yeah, so why not hot water? Mishum derav Nachman, derav Rav Nachman, amakra ve'haftal recha kamocha barulo misa yafa. Torah says ve'haftal recha kamocha. Look, this can also make for such an interesting discussion. I'll show you every place in the Gemara where it says ve'haftal recha kamocha, and it's not like an upbeat, uplifting a halacha generated from the pasuk. It is. You know, if you're going to be killed, you want to be killed the quickest way possible. So when you have to execute another Jew, so do so in the quickest way possible. So yeah, pouring hot water down the throat will eventually kill them, but it'll take longer. So we want the faster hot lead. So now I know Rav Nachman's rule. So why do I need the Gzera Shava? The Gemara says Amri. They said it's very simple. Lav Gzera Shava. Have I mean a Sreifas Neshama VeGuf Kayim. Lav Sreifa He. The E is right. Because I need the Gzera Shava to tell me that that's considered Sreifa, meaning an internal burning. Is a kiyum of sreifa. V'imishum derav Nachman nefesh lechavil is muros tuva ki hecha de tamas be'agla kamash malan. So the Gemara says, and if all I had was Rav Nachman, so then I would have burnt her. The quickest way possible would be basically to burn her entire body in a bonfire, in a pile of fire. So I need the Gzera Shava to tell me, no, it's an internal burning. So in other words, I take the Gzera Shava and I take Rav Nachman, and the conclusion is the pouring of the hot lead down her throat. The Gzera Shava tells me that's an internal burning. Rav Nachman tells me that it's to be done the quickest way imaginable. Okay, period.
Did this ever happen?
That's a good question. I'll assume yes, although I don't have a Gemara that actually tells the story. We have other capital crimes which the Gemara speaks about actually happening. But here, I don't know. And remember, Rabbi Kiva says any based in that puts somebody to death once in 70 years. That's a murderous basin, rough basin. Anyway, okay, Adkan, we'll stop over here. Okay, appreciate everyone's patience. We got through halfway through today's daf. We really covered a lot of ground today. Quickly, we started now the seventh parakah of Pesachim this morning. We answered the very basic question of how. How do you roast the carbon Pesach? We talked about the conduction of wood versus the conduction of metal. We talked about the extraction of blood. We went into a little bit today methods of extracting blood in general, and then specific to the carbon Pesach, and then we went on to a discussion today of roasting over a fire. What's the definition of fire? Right now we have it. It has to be an actual fire. And the last point we made today is that wood coals is considered a fire. Metal is a derivative of fire. Metal will not work. But if you have actual wood coals, so that is considered a fire. Tomorrow we'll finish this discussion of defining fire, and we'll start the next Mishnah. And tomorrow, a lot of Isser V'Heter, a lot of Tarovis issues coming up in tomorrow's Daf and Daf Ayin Vav.